from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Come, my children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep.
Hello, welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. Our show is brought to you by our wonderful sponsor, Hydramay Skin Nutrition. You can find them on the web at www.hydramay.com. That's HYDRAME.com. If this is news to you, please go check them out. They have men's and women's skin nutrition. So it's several steps beyond just regular skin care. And it's all natural, organic, and very reasonably priced. And I think we're all looking for that these days. Okay, my special guest tonight is a good friend of mine, Rick Miller, the wild man himself. Welcome to the show, Rick.
Thank you. They call me wild man, huh?
Yeah. So, yeah, this is going to be fun. For the new listeners, why don't you go ahead and give a bio of yourself, you know, who you are, where you came from.
Okay, basically a physicist. Did graduate work at Princeton and MIT, worked Navy intelligence for 11 years, was SEAL Corps first physicist, so I was SEAL Corps before we were known as Navy SEALs, and then I became Northwest Regional Director of MRU, which was Navy's Spook Central. I did all the West Coast projects. We had, at any given time, we had maybe 100 projects ongoing with a bunch of graduate students and or scientists in different locations doing studies for us on the West Coast. My cohort was Bill Franklin, Dr. Wilbur Franklin, at Kent State University, and he did all his works in the Midwest up in Chicago. And then, of course, we both reported to Dr. Carl Schleicher, who was MRU's director for almost 40 years. And that was basically anything that was paranormal would be sent to one of our labs. It would either be the West Coast, in which case I did it, or Bill in the Midwest, or Carl Schleicher, Dr. Schleicher, would do it on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
From there, I retired from the military and went into herb and spice farming. And currently, individuals like David Kucinich will call me the postman, because what I do is network rural communities and bunkers for Navy and congressmen.
Mm-hmm.
That's about what you wanted? No, I write books. Yeah, I write books.
Yeah, yeah, you write a lot of books. Didn't you tell me you had like 300 books on how to grow and harvest herbs?
Yeah, my background in that area is pretty extensive. Conrad Richter up in Canada, I write responses on websites in six countries, and will call me probably one of the best field men in the world. That means if you want to put an alternative crop in, I'm your huckleberry. I know how to do that part. But my primary expertise in physics was electromagnetic fields. And I was primarily based out of anesthesiology. And we would try to develop systems, tools, protocols for enhancing Navy and making them supermen. And that's what we did for 11 years. That's what I did.
Yeah, I dated a couple of those guys, you know.
Seriously. What was that like? Supermen all, huh?
Yeah. I have this vibe that attracts crazy physicists and also
armed to the teeth. Supermen. Don't forget the armor.
Yeah. Oh, Lord, life is too funny. You know, as you were talking about being involved with MRU, I told you before I have somebody's card from MRU, and then I realized also I have about three or four of those cards, and it's like I kept running into somebody. Pardon?
Whose cards?
I can't remember. I know they're MRU, and I ran into...
Mankind Research Unlimited was started by Dr. Carl Schleicher. Uh-huh. Out of Wisconsin Avenue in Washington, D.C. And we were, at the University of Washington, we were Northwest Regional Directing on projects. Our emphasis was mostly extrasensory perception and biofeedback. And we did some chip implant drug studies, other side things that were of interest at some point, like synesthesia, where we had cross-modal translations of senses and things like that. We did a lot of that kind of thing. We built things like a artificial intelligent database on a 360. We did that at the U, did a bunch of things like that.
Yeah, see, all that kind of stuff is just fascinating to me. You know, I was always torn between science and art. And it wasn't until I was quite a bit older that I realized you could do both. But they didn't
Same
tell me
path,
that when
actually,
I was going
it's
to
just a yeah. different form of artwork, yeah, process.
Yeah, yeah. So,
not
it all comes from the same
product,
place, you know.
But thing where you're going towards something, yeah.
Yeah. So the thing that's really interesting, listeners, pretty much anything that you talk about, Rick, is interesting. But I really wanted to let the listeners know that your book on ESP induction through forms of self-hypnosis is available now. So before we get into
that started in a project we were doing with Seal Corporation back in 1971. They first wanted a screening questionnaire. Before they did anything, they wanted a screening questionnaire where they could take 250,000 grunts and select the top 2% that were most intuitive or had a good averaging in guessing, making a hunch or a guess. That became the study group, the first criteria for what defined as Navy SEAL was their intuition or ability in guessing. And once they did that, then, of course, they started looking at other things, martial arts and skills, special skills. But all had to exhibit high degree of what we would call native sense or extrasensory perception, where they could make decision-making. If they came to a fork in the road, did they go right or left? We wanted the top 2%, and then we would train them on how to improve that ability. And that's what the book's about, basically, is how you do that, those protocols.
Yeah, and that's something that I think a lot of people would be interested in. So before we get too far, why don't you tell them how they can get a copy of that book?
Oh, yeah. We have a website, and in fact, we have a lot of websites, but we have a website. You can start with a portal with my name, richardallenmiller.com. That would be A-L-A-N for Richard Allen, A-L-A-N, Miller.com. Or you could go to my primary website, which was nwbotanicals.org. Now that's for Northwest, nwbotanicalsplural.org, the creature under the bridge. In that sense, you can then go to books and ordering, or we have an online website that you can order using your credit card using PayPal. And I have a lot of different books from over 40 years of writing books, actually. I've written books for more than 40 years. All of my books seem to remain in print, interestingly. That's kind of cool. I mean, it isn't like I sold them all at one time, but the Magical and Ritual Use of Herbs has sold, as of last year, 197,000 copies to date.
Wow.
Bestsellers defined at 50,000. So it means all my books have basically gone classic, because all of them have sold over 50,000 copies. The ESP book is just out. It's published by Earth Pulse Press, Nick Begich's firm. And you can also order it directly from the publisher at earthpulse.com, or you can order it from us and from richardallenmiller.com. There are several sites on that. If you wanted to do the book ESP Induction for Forms of Self-Hypnosis, I think that and several other of my titles are also on Yahoo and Amazon. So, you know, they're everywhere.
Yeah, and the thing that's really cool about this book is that, you know, you have the step-by-step things. Here, go do this exercise. And, you know, that's really what people need, because there's a lot of people who write about all their experiences with this stuff, but they don't really give you the formula, you know. I mean, there's a lot of people that their way works for them, and it doesn't work for anybody else. So with yours,
these were protocols that we developed for Navy SEALs and have worked so well. They'll take a normal person and move them to more than 400 times natural ability in guessing. That's over statistical inference. Imagine what it would do to an already sensitive psychic in terms of fine-tuning their ability. And what we're doing is teaching which states to go to for asking the question and then for receiving the answer. And, of course, the whole thing comes down to the issue of, are you basically seeing reality or are you creating it? And so this book is book one of a three-book series I'm doing titled, the group title is Toward the Evolution of Consciousness. With the second book is called Power Tools for the 21st Century, which means that there were eight tools that I developed or protocols for the Navy to make them supermen. That included things like mythic living, continuous breathing techniques, brain drivers. We had a number of different things that we used so that an individual like a SEAL could be capable of dealing with situations that the normal human being would not be allowed to do. The big question, for example, and then the last book, of course, was called The Non-Local Mind in a Holographic Universe. Basically, we're going to show that the universe is quantized in terms of fractal math and you're chunking from physical, emotional, intellectual, archetypal. There are eight basic neurologic circuits in the way we classify memory. And, of course, knowing how to do this is a power tool in terms of a way of looking at things which gives you more access to data and making decisions and correct ones for what you're trying to accomplish. Obviously, if you're a Christian, would you be able to see aliens if they walked in the door? Sometimes, you know, our belief systems will inhibit what we're capable of doing. And so one of the power tools in the power tools book is how you would change a belief like you might a pair of clothing, using it rather than as a driver, using it as a tool, you know, where you can accomplish your goal. In some situations, your beliefs and fundamental values will inhibit what you're trying to do, will not allow you to do that. And when I say all this, too, you know, Val, I would also say that there are some values I'll never give up. I have a pair of bell-bottoms that I will never fit in again. But do you think I'm going to throw those bell-bottoms away? I'll be darned if I will. They're old bell-bottoms, and they represent a part of my life that was very important to me. Christianity, belief systems like that necessarily may not necessarily have to go, but to use them in a given situation may not be appropriate. And what you have to do is learn how to use these belief systems as tools rather than limitations. That was another thing that we worked on.
Yeah, and you know, we when we did the workshop here, we had quite a few people did really astoundingly well, as I recall.
Well, it's a system that actually works. That's what we did. We had to develop something that actually literally took you from where you are to a place different. It was physically measurable. And so the way we did the workshop, I don't know if you remember, but what I did is I measured everybody's ESP ability right out of the gate. Mm-hmm. Then I explained how to change it. And then at the end of the class, we measured it again. That's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Yeah, and then there were several that that we corresponded with after the workshop who had done extremely well beyond that.
Yeah, it requires discipline and practice. Basically, the model suggests that there's an altered state of consciousness, not where you are right now listening to my voice, but a place very close nearby where your ability in guessing increases like 400 times over natural inference, whereas where you are right now, it's like 1 in 4. If you had a four different objects, you have a 1 chance in 4 of guessing the right one. But in an altered state, you can increase that to almost 99%. How do you do that? Well, I'm going to suggest that the Lord gave us all these different altered states, different ones, for specific uses and tools where you can do things you can't do with your normal conscious state. A normal conscious state is primarily concerned with survival, but survival issues may not be necessarily the most appropriate circuit dominating a situation when you're trying to get a job done. And to be able to switch from one to the other at will, there's some, you know, practice that's required, you know, discipline like meditation. You have to work at it a little bit before you get good at it.
Sure. Well, that makes sense. And we've got a question on the fast chat here. One of the listeners wants to know if you were using the NLP method to design those protocols.
Neurolinguistic programming is a useful tool. And I have a whole chapter in my book on NLP as a tool. Milton Erickson and others that originally developed the concepts of hypnosis and induction techniques, it only enhanced the Bandler and Spangler concepts of neurolinguistics, the way the brain hears certain things. Obviously, if you're going to use vocal sound rather than visualizations, there are certain keys that are primary in making a more effective presentation, if that's the right way to put it, in terms of how you might question yourself or respond to yourself. And neurolinguistics certainly is a very extremely important element in that arena.
Interesting. Yeah, I see that you have a chapter on that here. And,
yeah.
You know, I keep thinking back about that workshop that we did. And before I forget to mention this, we are going to be doing the workshop again. So anybody who's interested, it will most likely be in the Phoenix area, Phoenix, Scottsdale, you know, Tempe, in April or May. So we haven't set those dates yet, but, you know,
I'm talking with Ron Fisher, what is his name? I'm going to have to look that up. I'll get that name back to you here in a minute. We're going to be doing a series of them in, Ron Peters has a mind-body clinic in Scottsdale, and he does seminars like this, and we will be starting with a few of them there. Which ones we do, because see, I'm not sure yet. We're dealing like in the power tools, we have a whole set of seminars just on food groups. Obviously, if you're going to build yourself into spiritual consciousness or evolution, you've got to have a platform from which to launch. And so it's important to get the body in shape, physically and mentally, emotionally. And there's some techniques and technologies, protocols, that we developed for the Navy SEAL to do that very thing. And once you have a platform from which to launch, you know, a healthy body, obviously spirituality and emotionality can be gauged on how healthy one is. And that's a metaphor, but that's what we're really talking about, is the different ways we chunk information in a holographic system into categories, but they're all basically higher systems of something more fundamental on the information level.
Yeah, that, of course, makes me think about all the fasting that I've done. You know, back when I was really clean, when I was fasting, you know, every 2 months for 8 days and, you know, cleaning out the intestines.
Eight years old when you were still not a naughty girl, huh?
No.
Yeah.
No, this
8 years
was,
old.
This was,
I remember those days when I was naive and
disciplined. This was back in my 40s. I was doing all this stuff, and you know what was interesting was I had one time I was sitting in the hot tub. I was really sick the first fasting cleanse that I did, because of course, you know, I just jumped right into it. I didn't know anything about naturopathic medicine at the time. I was just an RN, and so I had gotten to the point where I was really almost like banging my face into the walls walking around. I was so uncoordinated because of all these toxins that were coming out of me. And I sat in the jacuzzi, and it's pitch black and everything out there, because of course I was skinny dipping, so I didn't want anybody going up the ropes. So I'm sitting out there in the dark in the jacuzzi, and all of a sudden I started hallucinating. And what I saw were scenes from movies that I had eaten Chinese food with. And that was back when, that was when they were putting MSG and all that crap in the Chinese food, you know. And it never really bothered me to a point where I could notice it. But what was so funny was I mean, it was weird. I was just sitting there watching these movies play out right in front of me. I was like, whoa. Now
yeah,
I understand.
That's association stuff. You know, that's how your subconscious, your higher part of yourself, tries to form dialogue with you, is by these images of feeling. It's not about the images themselves so much as how you felt about them. And that period of feeling when you were in Chinese restaurants. How do you feel about Chinese restaurants in that regard? How do you feel about that?
Oh, I love Chinese restaurants. I love Chinese food. Now, I wasn't in the restaurant when I was eating this. I was sitting there watching horror movies.
Interesting.
Because my second husband was really into horror flicks, you know, and I don't like the chop 'em up ones, you know, but I like the ones that make you go, ooh, that's really interesting. But more Twilight Zone type stuff, you know. But it was funny because here we would sit there regularly, a couple times a week, we'd go get some Chinese takeout, and we'd sit there and we'd watch some, you know, whatever the latest horror movie was. And so there I was just watching these things come out. I started cracking up. I'm sitting by myself in the dark in a jacuzzi laughing my butt off because I realized that this is a hallucination, but I realized it was happening because all of these toxins had been released suddenly, and my body really wasn't prepared for that. Because most people don't understand, when you do a fasting cleanse, yeah, you get rid of stuff, but it has to get out through your bloodstream. And so as that's released
from
the tissue. No,
toxins come in all kinds of packages.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
On all levels. And, you know, you can kind of see that metaphor in your health and what you eat and why you eat what you eat and when you eat what you eat. I always liked keeping a diary. That was another very important power tool, was honest journaling. You know, an Ira Progoff system of keeping a diary on it. It was like a magical memory or a snapshot of that moment rather than from recollection, which is contrived pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that brings up another thing. I think I've discussed this with you before, but one of the things that I did while I was in med school was learn this technique called holographic memory resolution. And I thought it was kind of a neat technique because you can start it and stop it whenever you need to, you know, without losing anything. So for people that have long strings of associated traumas, it's real easy to do in the office, and it's really profoundly powerful. But the thing that really got me was when the guy who was teaching us told us about how he had gone back to his family reunion, hadn't talked to anybody for 30 years because he was really physically abused and horrible, horrible family situation. And he had gone off and become a priest and, you know, done all this stuff, archaeology, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he was also a psychologist, and so he developed this technique. And he'd been working on himself with this technique and just visualizing that things were different than they had actually happened in his childhood. And he didn't realize how powerful it was until he went to the family reunion and everybody remembered the family history the way he had restructured it to be, not the way it actually happened.
It's very funny about how memory works like that and how we create our own universe and see things from a certain perspective of hallucination, using your words, where what we're actually perceiving isn't really real. It's what we want to see. The brain actually is kind of like a big crystal on top of a body, which is like an antenna. And the body has got all this DNA in it, which is a three-dimensional hologram of four space, but the brain is a four-dimensional hologram of five space. It has amorphous semiconductors and other kinds of biosystems that are modulating far more even than the body is to things like Schumann's resonance and earthquakes. We had, in Grants Pass, we had a major earthquake here down in the Eureka area. I don't know if it made your papers or not. A couple days ago, it was a 6.5 on the Richter scale. And I'm maybe 4.5 hours north by car up here in Grants Pass. So we had aftershocks, you know, that were in the 4-point category. And my new titanium hip locked up at when the first one went off. It went off. I locked up about 1 hour before the earthquake. And it didn't start to subside, and then it picked back up again when the first and then second aftershock happened at 3.5 and 3.1 down in the Eureka area. And up here, it was enough for me to not be able to walk during that period just because of my brand new titanium hip. The body is a very, sensitive laboratory to the external environment, there is a dialogue going on between your body and the biological variables that are in the area, you know, Schumann's resonance and your magnetic fields, your electromagnetic lines, and certainly the sunspots and some of the other things going on. And we watch how people go crazy during the full moon, you know, the lunar thing. There is no question that the body's responding to geographical constants. This equation that we developed for Navy protocols on ESP includes a geographic constant to it. It varies in certain places where you are and how you are in that place. Mm. You know, there are areas like burial grounds that somehow you have a higher perspective of sensitivity, whatever that might mean in terms of accessing information. Sensitivity is not as easy a word to define. So we've come up with some technology, ways of describing extrasensory perception that are essentially reproducible in terms of measurements. And what we're trying to do is determine which altered states are more prone for advancement in these fields of, let's say, taking a thought form and making it into matter. How does one do that? And that part of extrasensory perception that becomes not so much seeing reality, but creating it. That's what my second, and now I'm writing the third book, will be addressing, are those kinds of issues. Right now, what I want to do is get your body healthy, get a platform from which you to launch, and then begin by studying how to become more sensitive to how you change reality. Once you've got that tool, now you have the ability to cook your own dinner and be able to go somewhere with it. I think it was James Hillman that wrote the book, The Soul's Code, In Search of Character and Calling. How we handle a situation and integrate it, and how we have chosen what our purpose or life's work is on here on Earth. Those are the two primary drivers that all of us have to seek in the so-called shuffle of altered states of consciousness. There's a lot of things going on here.
Yeah, you know, that brings up one of the things I hear from people all the time, mainly that they have no idea what they're supposed to be doing. They know they're supposed to be doing something, and they feel very upset because they don't know what it is, and they're feeling all the pressure of all the earth changes and everything else. And
well, there's going to be a lot more of that, I'm afraid. You know, that's going to be what Joseph Campbell said, when you see the apocalypse on earth, when you see the kingdom of the Father on earth, that's when the apocalypse has occurred. That's what he says. It's perpetual in its potential. It's in the maturity of the individual observing and the way he chooses to sample his universe. And
it's interesting, too.
Driven,
you know,
yeah.
I've told people, you know, you need to be clear about what you're choosing, because you could choose the really dire stuff where you barely manage to live through it, or you don't, or you could choose that things just work, you know, and somehow...
Well, you know, Jungian psychotherapy would suggest that illnesses, all the illnesses, is the way the subconscious is trying to form dialogue with consciousness, and that once your ego, part of self, gets it, there's no need for the illness. And
healers agree with themselves
by simply listening to themselves.
Yeah, and that's something, like my body will tell me. It'll try to give me warnings. It'll be like, lay down or I'm going to lay you down. And I go, but wait, I just have to do this. Just give me another week. And the body goes, nope. You
know? Yeah,
and that's it
knows
man, and
it wants
then
to close
down.
Because, see, its agenda is different than the ego consciousness, which is primarily there for survival. And at some point, survival is not the only circuit that's important to be firing. I mean, there's reproduction, there's, you know, it comes together on a whole lot of different levels, all at the same time. It's all basically the same. Who was it? It was Gregory Bateson. Yeah, that's right. He said, what is your metaphor but to serve your paradox? And so I have a pair of ox out in my field. What is your meadow for? What is your metaphor? But to serve your paradox. Everything is in paradox. When we try to compare something like what I'm talking about or a subject or a feeling, it always is in relationship to something else. And that's how we organize our information and memory. Interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And, you know, I love having the conversations with you that we have because, you know, I have one foot, you know, firmly grounded in science and the other one is firmly grounded in woo-woo because I, you know, I've had so many...
And that boat that's starting to drift out to sea. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Gotta be a long daddy long legs to do that stretch.
Yeah, but it's so much fun because, yeah. You know, as I've gone through my own evolution, I've realized that it's not that difficult to be living several different lifetimes as different beings at the same time. And I've been blessed with being able to see, for instance, you know, five of somebody walking across the room in front of me, which always cracks me up. I can't help it. When I start seeing people double, triple, and quintuple, it just cracks me up because I realize I'm seeing into other dimensions with that. And it's just really cool. Now, what I'm working on, Bill...
You know, of course, that your actual visual system of seeing that double is a hallucination, that actually your eyes aren't really seeing that.
Right.
It's somehow a way that your body is trying to dialogue with yourself, your consciousness,
mm-hmm.
by
absolutely
making you see the image a certain way over many different possible ways it could be seen. And
oh,
some
absolutely,
of that,
which brings up the next question. You know, I'm aware that we are receiving about 16 million bits of information per second, and the brain only is looking at, or only shows us consciously 3 to 5 of them. And so, you know, this unnamed fear that a lot of people feel, I think my own way of looking at it is the body and the eyes, all your sense organs, are seeing something that the brain is not putting forward to you. It's not allowing you to really see what's there because it'd scare the bejesus out of you. You know?
Well, you know, of course, the brain is involved in...
Did I lose you? Hello?
And uh-oh. That's the whole idea of brain drivers. For example, learning how to move to a different part in the brain where you can witness your behavior. Now, once you're able to witness your behavior and watch to see what effect it's doing, yes or no, is it working or is it not working, that's when you can reach in surgically and make changes in your beliefs and your values. You have to be able to see it from a different mm-hmm. place in the brain than where it originated. If you can do that, that's why a lot of the meditational programs will say, well, you got to meditate, you got to learn how to meditate, go internal. Yes, that's true. You really do. There are shortcuts and technologies that you can use mm-hmm. to get you there on the fast track. Over the 30 years of meditating as a satsangi or something, but you know, the idea of the altered state and having a switch to go from your profane into your sacred place, that's the whole concept of ritual and the purpose of ritual in the myth. And having a switch when you can turn mm-hmm. it on and turn it off. And that I can't stress that more, that how important that element is to go being able to slide from conscious state into a more sacred place of dialogue with yourself and then come back to assimilate it and use it, actually use it like a tool. Mm-hmm. That's what the ESP book is about, trying to teach you how to do that with a phenomena that you can measure. Once you've got that, then we can start working on your body and foods, brain drivers, in your way of using your brain and witnessing things. It's like the one step is the same step holographically. It's the universe is either quantized, which means that it's either entangled and indeterminate or decoherent, or it's holographic, which means you have information and resolution of information. And the resolution of the information is chunked, just like a hologram is when you're going in a Mandelbrot program or a Mandelbrot generator. It has a certain physical size to it. The next size has a limitation on how big and how small it can be. It can't just arbitrarily be a different size. It has to do with the chunking or resolution of the information going from one meme of perspective, like it's physical, to another meme, which is emotional or intellectual. And these are the so-called 8 biological circuits that Timothy Leary talked about that we now call memes, the way we classify something. It's really interesting, you know, when you really think about it, the fact that almost everybody, we all agree, when it's green over blue, we all instinctively seem to know that that's green and that's blue. How does that work? That's interesting, especially when you realize that the universe isn't really quantized, it's holographic. It's very interesting. It has to do with the way we're hardwired and how we choose to chunk the variation going from one series of informations, which might be physical plane, to the second level, which would be emotional.
Well, that brings up another memory for me. When I first started getting back into my spiritual path and worked on seeing auras, before I ever saw a color, I heard a tone, and I instinctively knew that that tone meant a certain color. Although if somebody had asked me...
That's a really interesting thing. You know, that's called the voice of silence. Came from the Upanishads and the sound current, or the Shabad. That's that serpent, the end of the rainbow. And it sings like Gaia. It's Gaia. Everything starts with sound and goes either up or down the scale of electromagnetic waves. And visual goes in one direction and microwave goes in a different. And they're all different, but they all started from a very narrow bandwidth called the sound. It's something that you hear. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, and I couldn't tell somebody, oh, well, you know, if you want to do orange, it's this tone. I didn't know that consciously.
Yeah.
But when I heard a certain tone, when I looked at somebody, I knew exactly what that color was.
Edward Marks, one of our studiers under Oak, when we were doing our work with seals, worked it out of Yale and came up with a new technology called synesthesia, which is basically what made Tchaikovsky, when he did the Nutcracker, or Mickey Hart, when he played with the Grateful Dead, had the ability of seeing sound, not hearing it, but experiencing it as a visual. And this cross-modal part is a kind of thing that most children have that is then somehow, I don't know, programmed out of us from after we're about 8 years old. We're pretty much lost it. At age 3 and 4, most children are wondrous in terms of their ability and genius of seeing sound, but we lose that as we get a little older. And there's been a few people in history like Tchaikovsky or Mickey Hart that had that ability to still see the sound. That's a very interesting concept. We cover some of that in the ESP book too, by the way.
Yeah, that's another interesting subject. It reminds me of a trip that I took to Sedona years ago with a bunch of people. We were in the van and we were driving down to Sedona. We're going to spend the weekend, you know. And there were a couple kids in there that were about, well, between about 8 and 15. So different ages were in there. And Enigma had just come out with their second album. And we all loved Enigma, you know. So we're listening to Enigma. And this kid just started screaming all of a sudden, and we said, what is the problem? She had her hands over her ears, and she said, turn off that ugly sound. And we were like, wow, that was just so amazing to us, because we were enjoying it, and to her it was completely ugly. And I didn't really kind of grok that until I got to actually hear the difference. I was listening to the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, of all things. I wasn't listening to it on purpose. My mom had it on, and I was in the kitchen doing something. And it sounded to me like they were singing underwater. You know, it was that weird kind of a muffled sound. You couldn't really tell what it was, and it was
Tabernacle,
you know, kind of
choir.
Yeah. And it was. And I went, oh, my God, what is that awful noise? And she was so surprised. She said, what do you mean? She said, that's the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. They're beautiful. And I kind of sat back and went, whoa, the heck was that about? And I asked my teacher about it, and he said, well, when people make music from their ego, that's what it sounds like. But when they make music from their heart, it's the most beautiful thing you ever heard. And it doesn't make any difference what they're saying, you know. And they don't have to be like these genius musicians. It's just the difference between heart and head. And I was like,
yeah,
man,
that's,
you know?
One plane, like physical or intellectual going to emotional. That's those are the way we chunk various sets of values. Is this an intellectual idea or is this something emotional?
And, yeah, like you can see that when you read books, too.
I think you just suggested it would have categorized into an intellectual, whereas an emotional wouldn't have approached it from that point of view. It would have been more in terms of, oh, how do you feel about that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you like to think about things or do you like to just feel them?
Well,
people have different
both?
Ways, you know. They like to associate with information. We're all different, and some of that is arbitrary, which means you can use it as a tool.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, when you get your other book on the power tools in print, you know, you have to come back on and tell us all about that, because all this stuff, and, you know, obviously this is right up my alley, you know, I really like this stuff. And I think it makes a lot of sense for people, especially for people who have had, you know, more of an analytical background, you know, like to talk to an engineer and say, hey, you know, you can develop your ESP and there's a protocol to do it and it's all been tested and everything. They go, yahoo. Whereas if you talk to somebody who has been an energy healer all their life and you say, oh, well, there's this protocol to do it, you get a bunch of yawns, you know. So it's kind of interesting to see.
I have discovered myself that magic is a more higher form of physics, mm-hmm. and that there's a need in our sciences for a mystery school, that part where it doesn't matter how it works. How does that work? Well, it would suggest the mind's eye. Once you've got it there, you've got it. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter what the explanation is. I don't know of any law in physics that has lasted longer than about 20 years. Maybe Maxwell's equation for hitchhiking out of the galaxy, you know, that right-hand rule of thumb thing. But for most part, physics doesn't have the answers. It has models that it might use, and mm-hmm. that really where it all begins, I wouldn't have seen it if I hadn't have believed it.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
You know, in the mind's eye, in the eye of the beholder, the dissemination of belief and what you think is happening and what you are not sure is not happening. And once you have a good-to-go permit, you know, there you go. Reality follows. And there, in other words, we're all of us currently enjoying this current movie we're watching. What is it, Horror on Elm Street? Is that what we call that movie? And you don't like the outcome and you don't like where it's going. It's possible
uh-huh.
to change the movie.
Yeah, that's why I went out on the road for 2 years, try to get people to understand that we are the projectors, and we are projecting this reality out there, and there need to be enough of us seeing beyond that and really seeing that we can change and make this place paradise on earth, which it was always meant to be. And, you know, it's this whole thing of just believing that it's possible. And, you know, like I have so many people, when I have somebody on that's talking about what's really going on behind the scenes, I have so many people that email me or call me and say, well, how can I find out about this? And I tell them, don't waste your time, because when you find out about it, you'll go into fetal position for a couple of years. We don't have time for that. Instead, why don't you learn how to manifest the life that you want to see and forget all this other stuff?
I think it was Merlin that in a book by T.H. White, when he said, you know, anything not specifically forbidden is mandatory. If it's possible, it's not only possible, it's probable.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you hold these kinds of belief systems as you know, trump in your hand of cards, you can literally rewrite the current movie that you're currently enjoying. It's part of the non-local mind in a holographic universe. You don't like the outcome and you don't like where this is going, no problem. Rewrite the movie. And to do that, you, of course, have to work from a different place in the brain than the current movie that you're watching. And so that's what the whole thing is about, learning how to use various altered states as tools to help you achieve what you experience and enjoy as reality.
Well, exactly. And that's like when people, I've had people along the way that have said, well, you're not dealing with reality. It's like, no, I'm dealing with the reality I want. The reality that you want sucks. You know?
Well, if I gave you that $100 bill and I ask you to go ahead and burn it to your reality, I wonder how you'd be able to do that.
I already told you about that.
All of a sudden, the real harder reality start to kick in and your belief systems.
And speaking of a $100 bill, I actually manifested one of those one day, and I was like, dang, what did I do? I need to do that some more. But I mean, it was really funny.
Next time you do that, you got to be very careful, because when you use magic for personal gain rather than spiritual development, usually what happens is you get what you ask for, but not exactly the way you wanted it.
And you get a lot of challenges with it, because it's all about
and you get the insurance. Yeah.
Well, and
the
thing that was funny when I manifested that one, I knew that there was no money in this place I was looking. I knew it because I had already searched it 5 or 6 times that week. And I just, I wasn't trying to manifest it. I just said, I have to have like $5 extra to go pay this bill because I'm going to town and I just want to get this done. And son of a gun, I pulled this one plastic section out and out flew a brand new $100 bill. I was like, wow, thanks.
Yeah, well, Daniel Rubens would have done it a little differently. He would have said, even when they stick you in prison, you still have everything you need. It's the difference between things you want and the things you need. And when you're out of toilet paper, boy, I'll tell you, you've got a serious problem on your hands. And that good old Daniel Rubens, very practical person in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and that's the thing, you know, I think a lot of people that are freaking out about the economic situation and what could happen, it's because they're not appreciative of what they have. And
we're not in bad shape overall. There is plenty of food to feed the world. Really, there's just too many people on the earth for other kinds of realities. It's like that movie, when the day the earth stood still, and Keanu Reeves says, "What do you mean, your world?" It comes across very clearly that there are some misconceptions on what we do and what we assume is true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
That's what limits what we can become. And that's why the whole nature of the concept of beliefs is so critical. Using it as a tool, not a limitation.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, to start working into the belief system that anything is possible. And, you know, I'm reminded of this many times. I have a good friend who is very spiritual and, you know, loves the A Course in Miracles and all that kind of stuff. And she has always wanted to see some kind of phenomena, and she never has, and she's meditated and everything else. And when I tell her some of these things, she says, you know, I know that these things are possible. But she said, I don't understand why I've never seen something like that. And I used your favorite thing, because it's my favorite thing too. You know, you'll see it when you believe it, because it's probably happening right in front of you, but because it's in your belief system that it couldn't happen to you, it doesn't. You know, your brain just doesn't allow you to see it. And I've seen so many things like that where I just start cracking up, and I don't mean to be rude with people when I do that, but I can't help it, because I've seen them do stuff, and it's like it happens right in front of them, and they deny it. And I just kind of look at them like, well, let's see, there's me and you here, and I didn't do anything, and yet thing happened.
Yeah, that's what the bleep was trying to suggest, with the Aborigines not being able to see the ship on the horizon of the ocean, because they didn't have that concept to even look at that part of the ocean in that way to look for something. They didn't have that in their belief system. And so, of course, they didn't notice the ships until they were in the harbor. It's interesting. That is the way it is with man across the board, and that is a metaphor of what's going on. And the ability to shift from one state of consciousness to another allows you to see, experience, and actually hold more reality.
Now that made hold more reality. Wow, that hold on, that just stunned me. To hold more reality. Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. And of course, then the question is, whose reality? You know, and
a consensus. You know, the largest and loudest group of people, are they ones running the roost right now, and why the Earth's going down that rabbit hole, or what's going on here? And of course, that's what the Templars and some of the others in the later centuries started to discover, was if you wish to change the Earth, you changed yourself, and so the Earth changed with you. It's a metaphor, again, of how you perceive what's going on. And it all starts with personal, individual perception, not a group thing. Mm-hmm. Start with the individual and what that person is experiencing as a reality, and then you chunk it outward. And, of course, Buckminster Fuller was the one that talked about the power of the group was greater than the sum of the individual parts. There was a kind of building upon each other's belief system that led to urban myths and the concept of what is and is not possible. But, you know, I'm guessing, like Carl Sagan, when he was asked, you know, are aliens real and where are they from? And Carl Sagan replied that, well, I guess they're maybe from a lot further away and a lot closer than we realize. You know, he was a pretty interesting person, the way he saw the possibilities of dimensional physics that went beyond string theory, but was talking about, alternate universes. How many of them are there?
Yeah, who knows?
Possibilities have to do with the brain. There are some interesting phenomena in the brain that has made the literature, but not the news media, where heads up and guess what? You know, here's the latest hot flash. There's one that some of your readers might like to make a note on. Go to your search engine and put in Wernicke correction, which is actually a very specific part in the brain, comma, the Mars connection. The Wernicke correction, that's a place in the brain, and the Mars Project. Yeah, that's how you do it, the Mars Project. What you're going to find is that if people are hypnotized, and it's cross-cultural, it has to do with Chinese, Guam, wherever, you know, everybody, when they're hypnotized, if they're taken to this place in the brain to extract memories, we all of us have a similar experiential memory of having worked on Mars for the U.S. government. Now, how does that work? Is that Matrix? No. Probably not the Matrix, but something like that, like what we call the collective unconscious, where there is a common thread of belief within Homo sapien, to be distinguished differently than other mammals like the cetacean, whales, and so on, that have mythologies and myths that create the possibility of stories. And how many of them are there in the big city that we're all trying to fulfill? And they have outcomes. That's why they had the pantheon in Greek literature. They had pantheon with archetypal counters, you know, where these different gods interfering with your way of life. And they created these complexes in the way we go about our belief systems. Now, if you can do mythic living and change a belief system while you're doing that, that in magic is called pathworking. And that is an extremely powerful tool used by Navy SEALs to walk this earth. And it is a technology and protocol system that is, there's nothing else like it for power. I mean, it's enhancements. It makes one evolve in the way of using their consciousness. There's the evolution of consciousness. There it is, by definition. And that's what we're trying to do, is do this not for weapons now, but as a protocol for someone that wants to get off their dead ass and finally get to work.
Yeah, and you know, I had a, as you were talking about that, I was thinking of when I was up at Gunsight doing my beginning pistol thing. And they had this Navy SEAL there, retired Navy SEAL, young guy, but he was one of the instructors. And after a week of all this target practice and everything else, we had to do a test, basically. And so everybody had to go and, you know, shoot down the target, you know, in so many seconds or whatever. And this one guy, he was rapid firing his single shot pistol. I think it was a Glock, so he had, like, you know, a huge amount of rounds in there. And he's, like, doing a rapid fire and missing the target every time. And it was one of those popper targets, so you hit it and it flops down, you know. This Navy SEAL, what was so remarkable, and I don't think anybody else saw it, he drew his weapon from his holster, casually aimed it behind him, and hit the target and knocked it down. And everybody else just started screaming with laughter and yelling out, "Mercy killing!" You know.
No. That's a movie take on Wanted. You know, where Angelina Jolie makes that bullet bend around. Yeah, you think bullets go straight in space? You're curving a bullet or something. That's very.
Oh,
no,
see, I didn't see that, but I just see the Navy SEAL without looking at the target.
Yeah, you have senses of intuition, knowing precisely.
Yep.
Where your sight is. That has to do with having full vision, not just aiming and squeezing, but something more going on there.
Yeah, it was very confident. Interesting, and I don't think anybody else really noticed that but me. I just kind of sat there and went, "Wow, I'm impressed."
Yeah. Well, so as he did, you can do, Val. That's I've developed a series of protocols that we developed on how to do that, and going A, B, C, and the workshops would include me taking you to some of these guided images to specifically, we mean right here, not over there, you know, that kind of thing. Because once you've got it, it's like riding a bicycle. It becomes natural and part of your everyday little toys you play with, you know, like how to get the toothpaste on that toothbrush before the bathroom flush returns to natal position or whatever, you know. It's interesting how we play little games like that with ourselves, and that these become our addictions and our response coefficients to things.
Yeah, I was just thinking before the show that humans really, to be happy, have to play. And, you know, a lot of animals are like that, too. Dogs and cats are like that. And I don't think it's because they're around humans, because they naturally do that. Most animals do.
Well, animals are more close to spirit than man is. Mm-hmm. Man has lost some of his touch with spirit. That's what makes animals so devoted and knowing precisely their role in the whole thing, the scheme of things. It's that part of spirit. And, you know, you're talking on a lot of different things here, and they're all very important. They're all related the same thing about how you relate to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty important.
Yeah, we only have our hours actually up, but all of
my
these
pleasure.
Things, I mean, they're all parts of us as human beings. We're amazing creatures. And, you know, we're just one little speck in this universe of amazing creatures. And, you know, everything that we can learn about ourselves, I mean, it's just been coming forward at lightning speed lately, which it needs to, because we're all getting ready for this big leap of consciousness, you know. And
the aliens are going to come down, and we'll have 144,000 of us witness it from space. End of the mother, huh? That's what Timothy Leary called SMILE, the space migration, intelligence increase, longevity extension. And the only thing we didn't have was how to leave orbit. Well, that was the deal, you know, back then, as I remembered it.
Yeah, well, they put us here for a reason, and we're sequestered like little kids, you know. We're not grown up enough to play with the big kids yet, but, you know, we need to mature. But it's just so interesting, you know, all these different things that we're finding out and the different ways we're tapping into who we really are, which has been suppressed for a long, long time. And, you know, all you have to do is look at what a lot of the pharmaceuticals are doing now, and you realize they're cutting off our connection with spirit. And, you know, why would somebody do something like that?
I think we're going along as as a willing receiver for that too, though. A lot of us are doing it because we're lazy.
Well, yeah, a lot of people do that, and you know, but they're getting this this stress now where something's going to have to happen. They're either going to have to pick up their job, their you know, their mission that they came to do, or they're going to go in the other direction. You know, they realize they can't sit on the fence any longer, which is kind of a really interesting thing to watch happen.
Oh, that's that voice of reason and voice of coyote. Turns out those two voices are the same voice, and that voice of reason keeps you inside a box. And, of course, while you're in there, you're very comfortable, you feel safe, and everything's, quote, known, end quote. But the voice of coyote is the one where you chance for a moment to step outside the box, do something that is kind of scary, and you have doubt, and you're not comfortable, you're not feeling safe. That's where change occurs. And the two couldn't happen without the other. So they're like essentially the same voice in terms of stepping in and out of the box to make those changes occur, which, by the way, by definition is supposed to be, you know, everything by definition is changing. And that may or not be true according to the day the earth stood still. Man is not changing, doesn't want to, doesn't care to, blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, that's true. He's lazy and he doesn't have any need to change. And when we are faced with crisis, that's what the Nobel Prize winner said in that movie. He said, that's when man makes a remarkable effort in changing and becoming more.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's a really good place to end.
Nice talking to you, Al.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, Rick. It's always fun to have you on, and you really make everybody think. And I love that.
Okay. It's about time we all get off that pot. Shit or get off the pot. The way it goes.
Exactly.
Right?
Absolutely.
Here. Evolution of consciousness.
Yep. Awesome stuff. Okay, well, I'll have you back on again before we start doing all those workshops in April. But anybody who's interested, please drop me a line or drop Rick a line, and we'll, you know, put a... put you on the waiting list for the information as soon as it's available. So we're working on that right now. Okay, so we have been listening to some alternate reality talk and ESP induction through self-hypnosis is the book that we've been discussing with Rick Miller, Richard Allen Miller, physicist, author, biophysicist, herbalist, and wild man extraordinaire. And I think that's probably given you guys an awful lot of things to think about. So have some fun dreams tonight. And our show has been brought to you by our wonderful sponsor, Hydramay Skin Nutrition. You can find them on the web, www.hydramay.com, H-Y-D-R-A-M-E.com, all natural, organic skin nutrition. So please do check them out. And, as always, until next week, be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are. Nighty-night.
Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep.